Hello and welcome to Penguin Radio's newest sports talk show, In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams. Live broadcasting at Dominican University in California and radio.dominican.edu, today we're going to be talking a little NBA, NFL, baseball, and golf action. So stay tuned, it's going to be a wild ride. Whether it's the beat of the mic, you feel so unlike everybody else alone. In spite of the fact that some people still think that they know, but no, he knows the code. It's not about the salary, it's all about reality and making some noise, making a story. All right, today we're going to start off with a little NBA action. Free agency obviously going on in 2 days, July 1st, that's when it starts up. Draft was last week, Thursday, and so far, it's been a hectic week in the league, the association actually. Chris Paul, CP3, is headed to Houston. Oh my God. That's something I did not see happening. There was rumors going into the summer that he was interested in playing for San Antonio, that he was interested, I guess, in the Rockets and a couple other teams, maybe Cleveland. But no, he has settled on Houston. The Clippers yesterday made it official by trading him to the Rockets in a 7-player deal where they got Patrick Beverley, they got Lou Williams, Sam Decker, and a 2018 protected first-round pick. Now, there are two camps, and they're split on this trade. There's the camp that thinks, whoa, the Houston Rockets just got another superstar. Oh my God. You know, this is a league that's now built up with super teams. You need stars. And then there's the camp that's like, wait, you got two point guards on the same team that are both ball dominant. How is this going to work? And I'm kind of in the second camp. How are you going to play two ball dominant, big personality point guards together? Now, let's not forget, Chris Paul is the guy on the sidelines that loves to scream and yell at his teammates. He's not the most likable guy to play with. They call him a leader, but is he really a leader? Are you really a leader if, you know, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, the two best players on your team weren't huge fans of you. You didn't really get along with your coach. Does that really make you a leader? And then you got James Harden, who's kind of had an up and down career in the NBA, not playing wise. He's a superstar. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about coaching ability. I'm talking about likability. And I'm talking about in the clubhouse, in the locker room, you know, James Harden, go back to 2 years ago, him and Dwight Howard on the same team, that was a toxic locker room, no doubt about it. They did not get things done because they could not get along. It wasn't because they didn't have the talent. It was because the two players, the two stars on the team could not get along. So Houston makes the decision to get rid of Dwight Howard, and he comes in, and he has his own team, and he does great because he's the only star on the team. But now you're bringing in an alpha dog. Now you're bringing in a big, big guy. Are they going to be able to coexist with each other playing the same position? I don't know. I hope so, because it's going to make the league more entertaining. Someone needs to challenge the Warriors. But you don't know. It's the risk of putting two of these guys on the same team together. In this league, look, it's a star-driven league. We all know that. And I can't say that it's a bad move, because if I had the chance to add Chris Paul to my team, I would do it too. But you have to be cautious about it. You can't just sit there and say that Chris Paul is going to lead this team to the NBA Finals or the Conference Finals and challenge the Warriors. We don't know. We have to see how it plays out. Also, in the association, Paul George. That's something that I've wanted to spend a week talking about. Where will Paul George land? It's the question on everyone's mind. He's told Indiana, look, I'm not coming back next year. I have one more year on my contract. After that, I'm not re-signing with you guys. I want to go to LA. I want to play for Showtime. I want to play for Magic Johnson. I want out of here. Now, Kevin Pritchard and the Indiana Pacers have an issue on their hands. They have to trade this guy, but now they're not going to get equal value for him. It's just not possible. Every team in the league knows he wants to leave, so they lose leverage there, and every team knows he wants to go to the Lakers, so they're all scared that it's going to be a one-and-doner, that they're not going to be able to keep him. I've heard Boston, I've heard Houston, I've heard a couple other teams very, very interested in him. Obviously Cleveland with LeBron James, but I don't think they can get it done because Kevin Love does not have equal trading value. Look, if it was me and I'm Boston, I'm Danny Ainge, I'm trading for Paul George tomorrow. Whether I get the assurance from Gordon Hayward or not, Gordon Hayward, forward from Utah, who are there, Boston is trying to get in free agency. Look, you have accumulated so much draft capital, an insane amount of picks over the years. You have two high first round lottery picks next year. At some point, you just got to make the move. You got to go all in. You can't just keep hoarding and hoarding picks, because that's a pick is like a lottery ticket. You never really know where it's going to end up. You're dealing with 19-year-old kids, all right? He could have all the talent in the world, but he could have problems outside of the game, all right? He could be the perfect guy outside of the game, but he might not have a jump shot. You never know, because they're 19-year-old kids. They're not 25-year-olds. They're not even full. They can't rent a car. They can't even rent a car. Draft picks, these guys, they come in the league. So you have the opportunity to get a top 15 player in the league. At this point, all you have to do is probably trade one of the two first rounders next year and a starter, a Jay Crowder type. That's all you're going to have to give up for Paul George. All-star Paul George. Should have been second or third team Paul George. You add that to a team with Al Horford, Isaiah Thomas, my favorite player in the league, and all of a sudden, you're actually looking to challenge the Cleveland Cavaliers. Everyone knows at this point, Cleveland's kind of teetering. LeBron James might leave. He might go to Los Angeles. If I was the Celtics right now, it's time to be proactive. It's time to make the move, because if you don't, you might just be waiting to, you just might be the last guy sitting at the party and everyone else has brought the girl home. I want to segue also to Phil Jackson and the Knicks saga, where we're still talking about the NBA. Phil Jackson recently let go from the New York Knickerbockers, thank the good Lord. Worst executive I've ever seen since I've been following sports. But the Knicks, they have a lot of problems, as everyone knows. And right now, I think their best course of action is to hire David Griffin, the fired, well, not fired, actually, him, the former GM of the Cavs that was mutually decided to let go. Dan Gilbert, the owner, and him did not get along, even though he did a great job in Cleveland, led him to three straight NBA finals. I think you hire him. I think if you're James Dolan, you say, look, it's been 18 years since I've owned this franchise. I've won 17 playoff games, and I believe 8 or 9 of them were in the first year. So I'm not making the playoffs. I'm not being successful. I'm running this team into the ground. I'm going to relinquish a little control. I'm still going to own the team. I'm not saying he needs to sell the team, because I understand owning a sports team, owning the New York Knicks in that area, that's a big ego thing. He's not going to do that. He's not going to sell the team. But find someone, let him in charge, let him make the decisions, and someone competent. Don't just get a big name because it's a big name and it's New York. Find someone that will do the ins and outs, the nitty-gritties of the job. Hire him, let him have control, and I think the New York Knicks could be on the rise. All right, that looks like the end of our first segment. You are listening to Penguin Radio at Dominican University in California. We are about to head to a break. We'll see you on the other side.
Send me Taylor, I'm so happy to be here, part of your first show. I'm feeling great. I've been looking forward to this all day long. Super excited to be on In the Zone, your very first show, your maiden voyage. It's really cool to be here.
All right, Stuart. So we were talking the other day, and I wanted to have a guest on my first show, but I wasn't sure who to have, obviously, because it's the first show and you just want to practice. You never know what mistakes you could make or what could happen. Hopefully we make zero, though. But I decided, who better to have than the guy that created the station himself from scratch when he went to college here? And Stu's a big-time golfer. You were down to, what, a 2.2 handicap at
Be
one
serious.
Point?
No, no. The lowest I ever was a 6. I'm currently a 9, and I'm pretty comfortable as a 9, but no better than that.
Okay. Well, anyways, Stu loves the game of golf, and we decided we're going to do a little segment here on the PGA Tour. But first, I want to start with Tiger Woods and this decade-long tragedy.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's so strange. Your perspective and mine on Tiger Woods. It's got to be so different. I've always felt really lucky to have witnessed Tiger's career from beginning to end, literally. From 1992 to 1999, I was a rules official with the NCGA, and I did a whole bunch of USGA events. I was certified all 7 years as a rules official. Now, I've taken a lot of exams in college. None of them were as difficult as my USGA exam. But, you know, that's the thing about rules in golf. There's a lot of them, and you can't get them wrong, right? So I don't know what year it was, but Tiger was 19, and he was qualifying at Merced Country Club, Lake Merced Country Club in San Francisco. And I believe it was either his first U.S. Open or the U.S. Amateur. Either way, Tiger was there. Everybody was nervous. I hadn't really heard of him much. But a couple of my friends I had come out to watch and said, "Oh, this Tiger Woods guy, you got to see how great he is." And as it turns out, he was pretty great. And so I got to see his career from beginning to end. You, however, have really only seen the back end of his career when he's been hurt all this time.
So yeah, what's fascinating is actually I started playing golf in 2009. So I've never witnessed Tiger Woods win a major championship. I've watched every, you know, highlight there possibly could be, but I've actually never witnessed the man win a major championship live.
15 shots at Pebble Beach, the greatest margin in a major ever. And that was just one of a thousand different records the guy broke. And, you know, you and I could have a long conversation on whether or not Jack Nicklaus, the greatest golfer of all time, or Tiger Woods. And certainly we can make an argument for both of those guys. I think the two of those guys are light years ahead of any other discussion of who would be the greatest golfer of all time.
Oh, no doubt. I completely agree with that. The thing with Tiger for me is I don't think you've ever seen a level of dominance in any sport quite like Tiger Woods in his prime. Maybe Mike Tyson when he was just knocking guys out for that little span, but I'm talking about he had a physical and mental dominance over every other player in the field that's just unmatched in any sport.
I think your comparison to Mike Tyson is a good one, but you have to think of how short-lived that career was by comparison. Getting your brains bashed in night after night, you're not going to go for 10 years.
Yeah.
Tiger, 10 years at the absolute apex of any golfer's career. I mean, he wasn't following anybody. He was writing the book as it was going. It was really astounding to see. And again, I feel lucky to have watched it. And here we are. The guy hasn't done anything in, what has it been, 11 years since his last major at Torrey Pines when he was in that broken leg finale on Monday against Rocco Mediate. And here we are talking about him. And without question, in our life, in our era, because though I'm older than you, Jack was finished by the time I was thinking about golf, you know, in a serious way. Yes, he won in 1986, but you could argue that was a fluke. But the point is, you know, Tiger was so dominant. And so, like, you compared him to Tyson. You could compare him to Michael Jordan. You could compare him to other greats in other sports. But I can't think of too many other sports where the guy stayed at the top, rested on top. All of his opponents knew he was the guy for 10 full years.
Now, here's the question. Have you ever seen a fall from grace as hard as Tiger Woods? From being so high, so highly regarded, so at the peak of sports to just at the ground, rock bottom.
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, and infidelity, it seems like at the end of the day, that's always going to catch up with you. For 10 years, the guy's riding on his sport, riding high at the highest possible level. But he had all this ancillary stuff going on. And then he married Elin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nordgren, or I think that was her name. And darn it, when I heard that report that she had bashed his window in with a 9-iron and he had wrecked the Blazer, or what was it, the Escalade,
yeah.
And in the middle of the night, boy, it felt like it was over fast.
It did. Oh, man.
So the answer is no. I can't think of a harder fall from grace, from the highest peak to kind of the depths.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, and it's, I remember the day after that all hit and, you know, the CNN reports are flying and everything, and you go, it's done. He may come back and he may win and everything, but he's done as being the person that he was. And I think that's for him mentally, because it's hard to think sometimes as athletes, as human beings, because they're put up on such a pedestal. But as a human being, that's, you know, he's equal to every single one of us mentally. And that's a lot to take from being this beloved hero to so many kids and idol and the greatest of all time and all of these things to this guy's a cheater. We don't like this guy. No one wants him to win.
Oh, you know, and you said it very succinctly. And in fact, it's exactly accurate. The guy was a cheater, darn it. And there's no way around that. Tiger Woods Foundation, saving kids, all of the college programs and putting people through, getting them an education, inner city, urban kids, helping everybody. Oh, he's never going to be able to shake the cheater thing. That bothers me too, because Tiger transcended all sport. He wasn't just a great golfer. He wasn't just the greatest golfer of all time. He was Tiger Woods, so much bigger than that.
I remember the first time I had actually ever heard of Tiger Woods, believe it or not, is Gatorade, the drink, obviously. They had Gatorade, but it was called Tigerade. And I'm looking at this, and I'm like a six-year-old, and I'm playing Little League, and they would sell them in the snack shacks. I'm looking at this, I'm like, there's a golfer on the cover of Gatorade right now. Like, that's how big he was. There was not a person in the world that knew anything about sport that didn't know who Tiger Woods was. You might not know who Phil Mickelson is or any other guy. You would not. I would venture to guess that 90% of the very, very, very casual golf fans didn't know who Jack Nicklaus was, but they knew who Tiger Woods was.
Well, I don't know about Jack, but I think you make a good point with Phil Mickelson. Because if you're a golfer, you know who he is. But if you're not a golfer, you probably don't know who he is. But if you're not a golfer, you do know who Tiger Woods is. The same way that in the 60s, you knew who Arnold Palmer was. And up until his death just recently, not even a year ago, you knew who Arnold Palmer was, not just as one of the great golfers of all time, but he was Arnie. The way people know of Tiger. And it's great when you get a guy at that level. And I'm sure glad that Arnie was never caught up in that kind of scandal.
Well, the thing is, too, and we got to wrap this up soon, but Tiger was headed towards that Mount Olympus, that Mount Rushmore of athletes. I mean, you could have put him up there. You know, maybe he wins 10 more if none of that happens. Maybe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you could have put him up there with Muhammad Ali, with Jim Brown, with, you know, Babe Ruth. These guys that were just otherworldly figures in their sports. But now it's like, everyone remembers him as being great, but you just remember him in flashes. And now all you hear is, he got a DUI or all of this
When's
stuff.
When's it going to end?
It's like, there's nothing more that I wish for the guys just to come out and just win a major and just hang it up. Don't keep going. Just hang it up after that.
Hey, I want to say one thing before we go, and I know we got to wrap, but I want to say thank you very much for allowing me to be your very first guest on your very first show. It means a lot to me. It really does. And I love that first segment that you did on the NBA, and I can't wait to listen to the rest of the show.
Yeah. All right, guys, that was Stuart Horn with a lively conversation about Tiger Woods and the golfing world. We'll be right back. This is Penguin Radio at Dominican University, radio.dominican.edu, and we'll be right back. Been this way since I stood a foot tall. You're a good catch with spouse, got a pretty mouth and a good jaw. Give me good, plus the wood grain. I want to stain. You listening? Turn me back up, are you insane? Trying to talk over me in the car? Shut the f*** up on my playing. I'm a stain on the underwear of life. What's the saying? Where the thunder there's lightning. And they say that it never strikes twice in the same place. And how the f*** have I been hit six times in three different locations on four separate occasions? And you can bet the stake in the... All right, welcome back to In the Zone with Taylor Williams. You're listening to Penguin Radio at Dominican University in California, 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. I am joined by a very special guest right now, my dad, Jeffrey Schaub. Jeffrey, or dad, I don't know what to call you on here because you're my guest.
I just want to say, you know, the amazing thing about this is you are doing what I did 3 months before I did. I started at Emerson College Radio the first week I was there 40 years ago in September. So it's pretty amazing to me that you're doing this just as I did at that time.
Okay, well, I'll explain to our listeners what you did. You worked at KPIX, Channel 5 in the city, for 25 years, correct?
Right.
And after that, you worked at KGO for two.
I was at KGO Radio for 1 year.
Okay, 1 year. And then after that, it's been KCBS for the rest.
And then my buddy Ed Cavanero, who was the news director at KCBS, called me up. I was in the KGO Radio newsroom, and the phone rings, and it's Ed, and he says, "How'd you like to come work at KCBS?" And I was like, "Sure."
Okay, so you're a lifelong newsman.
Yeah.
And the reason I brought you on today, actually, is because, well, obviously you're my dad, and I wanted someone that I'd feel comfortable interviewing with. Same with Stu, who did a fantastic job talking about Tiger Woods. But also because you're just fascinated by the business side of sports. You know, we were talking earlier when we were doing our pre-tape for this about the NFL, and especially the whole issue with concussions and how that's going to affect the league going forward. So as a dad, first and foremost, because I know I played 2 years of Pop Warner and I got banged up a couple times, but for the most part I was lucky. I played middle linebacker, I played left tackle, which are positions where you can get hurt, but for the most part I didn't. But other kids, I know safety was always a big concern for you. As a dad, if you, let's say you had a 10-year-old now, knowing everything you know, would you let your son play football?
I would let him play Pop Warner because I think Pop Warner is pretty safe. Although I do remember one time there was a player got knocked flat on his back. You remember that? They had to bring in the paramedics unit. I think he was okay.
I hit him.
Is that, that was you?
That was you. I was a big kid.
And then they kicked you off the team, as I remember, right after that. Yeah. What I know, I to be honest with you, I would not encourage my boys to play football. I worry about the injuries. I worry about the concussions. I'm just, you know, it's like I wouldn't encourage you to be a boxer either, you know.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we went down that path.
Fortunately, yeah, we did. Yeah, let's not talk about that, shall we?
Okay.
KO.
Anyways, no, the reason I bring this up is because obviously, as most casual and big-time football fans know, the concussion epidemic in football is a huge issue. It was outlined in the movie Concussion with Will Smith in it. And
yeah, that's right. It's played a major role now in sports, and everybody's talking about it.
And I really believe, you know, the NFL is doing more and more now to try to help the situation. And obviously, it's not a perfect science because you have guys that are 300 pounds, huge, going at each other full force. But there was a 20, 30, 40-year period where they didn't address it, and they knew more than they let on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people suffering from that right now. Like, for instance, Dwight Clark, who got diagnosed recently with ALS, thinks that football, he's not sure, but he thinks that football might have been a cause of that. And obviously, if you were to look at it from the outside point of view, football most likely was a cause of it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't run in his family, as far as I know. And the thing is, look, Tom Brady, his wife recently went on CBS This Morning. His wife's a beautiful model and everything. And she basically kind of slipped up and said, Tom's had multiple concussions and he hasn't reported them. That's a big problem for the NFL. Tom Brady's the best player in the league's history, I believe, right? What if this guy in 20 years has CTE and he jumps off a bridge or, you know, kills himself or goes crazy or all these things? That's very, very likely scenario at this point, you know? You never know, because Tom did play in the era where they weren't as protective. This is the last 5, 6, 7 years. This is really, really recent.
All right, let me tell you what I think. I think we're headed toward, this is the future of the NFL. I don't believe the NFL is going away, and I don't think it's become less popular, although the NBA certainly is giving it a run for the money. I think they're going to start wearing uniforms that are almost like Terminator. They're going to have these bulky, super padded, super protected, super technology outfits that are designed to protect them in a very scientific way. I don't see how you're going to do it any other way. Right? How else are you going to do it except protect these guys without eliminating human players altogether and putting, you know, robots at?
So what you're basically saying is the next Transformers movie is just going to be an NFL game. That's basically what you're saying.
That's the way I think it's going to go. I don't know what else you're going to do.
See, it's hard because I don't want to say is football dying? Is it dying in America? Because it's not. It's the most popular sport. People love college football. They love high school football. And they love the NFL. So I don't want to say it's dying, but...
Is it impacting high school?
It is. It's impacting...
In what way? How?
Well, first of all, it's decimated Pop Warner. I don't even think there is a Pop Warner League in our town anymore. And if there is, it's one. We used to have two, and there's half the teams and half the amount of kids playing. Obviously, Texas and Alabama, it's still big, but parents are becoming more and more worried about letting their kids play football, and they're getting them more and more into playing basketball and stuff because these kids are, looking at, like, Steph Curry, and now 6'3 people, or, 6'3 kids can play basketball, or 6-foot kids can play basketball. So, and you can make more money in basketball and make more money in baseball and all these other things and less injury risk. I think it is affecting the game, and I think it's slowly affecting the game. Don't get me wrong. And I think football should do a better job of addressing the problem with its youth, saying the NFL should put more money into saying, yeah, we want kids to play football, but we want it to be extremely safe. We want them to learn the fundamentals of the game. Maybe we shouldn't play Pop Warner football. Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should play flag football until a certain age and then increment it up.
I think they need to change the mechanics of the game, maybe. Maybe we can't have the potential for some of these dangerous encounters on the field, right?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. That being said, it is, football season training camp is going to come up pretty soon. Expectations for next year, 2018 season. Who do you think's gonna win it all?
Who's gonna win it all?
Yeah.
This coming season?
Yeah.
The Niners.
Oh wow.
No. No, not at all. It could be the Patriots again.
I completely agree with that. I mean, just look at what they did in the offseason. They were smart. They realized that, Tom Brady's aging, he just won a Super Bowl. You don't have a lot of years left with him. Let's cash in. Let's trade our draft picks. Let's go ahead and grab Brandon Cooks. Let's grab a couple of older pass rushers. Let's get Dwayne Allen from the Colts. And let's go for veteran talent. And by doing that, they've shored up their roster even more. I think, personally, it's a better roster than last year. And the competition facing them is not as hot. I mean, you got the Raiders, and obviously we were talking about the Raiders earlier. They're looking good. They got Marshawn Lynch, beast mode. And then in the NFC, I mean, you got Dallas, but Dallas has just lost two of their pass rushers. I don't have as much faith in them as I did last year. Aaron Rodgers, you can never count out, but he doesn't have the team around him.
Do you think the Patriots are wearing out their welcome?
You mean as...
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, people are really tired of the Patriots now. Like they've won so many times. Please,
yeah,
go away.
I do because I think they're becoming the Yankees from 1996 to 2012. That by the end of that run, and all these guys are just old, and you've seen them for so many years that you're just kind of tired of them winning. You want someone new in there. You want a new dynasty, and I think, to be completely honest, that's where the Warriors are heading too.
Well, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, I think the Warriors are gonna get to a point where if they win two or three more championships, it's get them the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. I'm done with them. I want to see someone else win. I don't. It's football. A lot of the
our gain, their loss.
Yeah, football a lot of the time gets called the no fun league. I don't believe that, but. Right now, it is not as fun as it has been in the past. And with that, we got to wrap up this segment. Dad, that was a great job. Thank you for coming on my first show. You're listening to Penguin Radio at Dominican University, 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. I'm Taylor Williams, and we'll see you after the break.
Touch and roll. Used to always stay at home. Be a good girl. You was in the zone. Yeah. You should just be yourself. Right now you're someone else. You used to call me on my cell phone.
All right, welcome back to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at Dominican University in California, radio.dominican.edu, and 102.3 FM. We're going to switch over from a little football action to a little baseball action, and we're going to talk about the San Francisco Giants, the team that is, well, underachieving, to say the least. The Giants right now sit in the basement of the NL West. They look like a shell of themselves in the past, you know, 7 or 8 years since this dynasty really started. This is a team that won 3 World Series in 5 years, every even year, and now looks like they couldn't win a playoff game to save their lives. The Giants, obviously managed by Bruce Bochy, who I think is a Hall of Fame manager and one of the best guys in the league, deserves the benefit of the doubt. But there are problems with this team, and we're going to go through and we're going to try to find them. First, I think the Giants really have a problem dealing with the fact that they didn't think about certain positions in free agency. They just thought they'd have filler candidates for them. I'm talking about third base. I'm talking about left field. Look, the Giants have had 7 different starting left fielders in the last 7 years. Okay? There has been a revolving door at that position, and that's not good. You're talking about a position that normally you have a good hitter at, or at least a guy that has a good on-base percentage, someone that can contribute offense, because that's not a defensive position. Right field and center field are way more of a defensive position. Left field's the guy, the first baseman that can't really play first base, but he can't really play left field, so you stick him out in left field and just hope the ball doesn't really go to him. That's what left field is a lot of the time in the league, and I'm not saying there's not great left fielders, but that's what it is, and the Giants have not figured that out. They've also spent a lot of money on homegrown players. I'm talking about guys like Matt Cain. I'm talking about Lincecum before he left. They kind of shell out money for the guys that they love, and that's fine. And I think it was a good idea for a little while because, look, you create these guys for the fan base. You market them. You sell them. But you also have to pay them a lot of money. And they were smart not to pay Pablo Sandoval all that money because, obviously, the health issues and everything. And look at how he's doing in Boston. But I think they're a little too loyal, and that's become an issue. And look, I love these guys. I mean, I am a baseball hound. I got into sports particularly because of the 2010 championship when they had, you know, that team and Don't Stop Believing and everything like that. And it was a blast, Aubrey Huff and, you know, Posey back then and Freddie Sanchez. And it was all great and everything. But that was one of those, you know, genie in a bottle years. Now, things have kind of caught up to them. You can't live forever. You can't be the dynasty forever. And I hate to say it because I'm a Bay Area sports fan through and through, but this is the year of the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, Cody Bellinger, my God. If you don't follow baseball, it's this rookie phenom that the Dodgers brought up. He missed the first month of the season. He already has 24, 25 home runs. That team is rolling right now. They're the best team in the NL, and frankly, they might be the best team in the league, them in Houston. And look, I really think they've surpassed the Giants. I think it's time that they have taken the reins. Look, these things go in cycles. It's like a pendulum. They swing back and forth. It was the Giants' time, and I think the door is closed. Unfortunately for all you Bay Area sports fans and you Giants fans, I don't think it's opening up again. I think the play here for the Giants is to blow the team up. I know that's controversial. I think you got to trade your assets now. You got to cash in. You got to get the young guys. I'm not talking about Posey or Bumgarner. I'm talking about you got to trade Pence. You got to trade Panic. You might have to trade Belt. You might have to trade Crawford. You might have to trade Samardzija. You might have to trade Cueto. Not all of them, obviously, but some of these guys you might have to trade. You might have to get the young assets because you don't have a farm system at all. I mean, look, you gave $52, $58 million to Mark Melancon in free agency to a closer. You didn't need to do that. I understand you had bullpen issues last year. Come on now. He's a closer. He pitches one inning a game. Does he really deserve to be making $10, $12, $20 million a year? No, he does not. So, San Francisco, trade off your players. Okay? Trade them off. Send them to teams. Get prospects. Rebuild up a little. Come back 2-3 years. You still got Posey. You still got Bumgarner. I'm not talking about a full rebuild. Call it a retool. Sell it to your fan base however you want. But something ain't working here, and you got to fix it. I'd also like to talk about Aaron Judge just because he right now is the biggest name in baseball. Of course, he is the right fielder, left fielder for the New York Yankees, revitalizing baseball in New York. This guy is an absolute stud. I have a man crush on him, and I'm not lying about that. But I want to address, does he change the way we view baseball players as athletes? This is a 6'7 guy. Basketball scholarships. He is a freak athlete. Now, my question, and I don't have the answer to this, but I just want to pose this out there. If more athletes became baseball players, and I'm talking about these guys that, you know, can play in the NFL, the NBA, you know, real true athletes, not guys that have skills like I can hit the ball or I can pitch and stuff. I'm talking about just athletic people. Would they become better players? With a 6'7 guy, does that make him a better athlete? And the example I would use would be Tiger Woods in golf. Tiger Woods, I'm not making this a racial thing, but Tiger Woods came into a predominantly white game with very unathletic guys, you know, because golf from 1990 and before, they did not think of themselves as athletes. They go drink a beer and eat a burger after 18 holes, all right? The most cardio they did was walk in the course. Tiger Woods came in, all right? His dad was a military man, conditioned him like a military man, worked out, you know, was a real athlete, had real athletic genes. And he came in and he changed the game of golf. And now all these guys like Dustin Johnson, they're all freak athletes. Is Aaron Judge doing the same thing to baseball? Is baseball now going to recruit 6'7 guys? Are they going to steal people away from the NBA? Because look, baseball is the game you make the most money. You have guaranteed contracts. It's kind of the safer, better option. If I had a kid, I'd rather have him play baseball than football. I might rather have him play baseball than basketball. It's easier to make it. Not everyone's a freak enough athlete and, you know, a good enough shooter, defender, whoever to play the game of basketball. But anyone can learn how to play baseball. All right. I am going to send it to another break. You are listening to Dominican Radio at Dominican University in California, 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. In the Zone with Taylor Williams. We'll be back after the break.
It been a day for me. Yeah. Hey, I remember syrup sandwiches and crime allowances. Finessing on them with some counterfeits, but now I'm counting this. Parmesan where my accountant lives. In fact, I'm down in this. You say with my boo babe tastes like Kool-Aid for the analyst. Girl, I can buy a Westie World with my base stuff. That is good, won't you sit it on my taste buds? I get way too petty, won't you let me do the extras? Pull up on your block and break it down, we playing Tetris. AM to the PM, PM to the AM phone. Eat up your per diem, you just gotta hate them phone. If I quit your BM, I still rock Mercedes phone. If I quit this season, I still be the greatest funk. My left stroke just went viral. Right stroke, put a baby in a spiral. Soprano C, we like the on the high note, it's levels to it, you and I know. Tell them be humble, hold up, sit down, hold up, be humble, hold up, sit down, sit down, sit down, be humble, hold up, sit down, be humble, hold up, sit down, hold up, be humble, hold up, sit down, hold up, be humble, hold up, sit down, sit down, sit down, be humble, hold up, sit down, be humble, sit down, hold up. Thinking that he frontin' on that man. Get the off my stage, I'm the Sandman. Get the off my, ay, that ain't right. I make a play blowing up your whole life. I'm so
sick and tired of the Photoshop. Show me something natural like Afro on Richard Rock. Show me something natural, I wanna feel some stretch marks. Still to take you down right on your mama couch in polo sock. Hey, this is way too crazy, hey, you do not amaze me, hey. I blew cool from AC, hey. Obama just page me, hey. I don't fabricate it, hey. Most of y'all be faking, hey. I stay modest about it, hey. She elaborated, hey. This that Grey Poupon, that AV on that TED Talk. Watch my soul speak, you let the meds talk. Ay, if I kill an it won't be the alcohol. Ay, I'm the realest after all. Tell them be humble.
Hold up,
sit
hold
down.
Up, hold up, hold up,
be humble.
Hold up,
sit
hold
down.
Up, sit down,
be humble.
Hold up,
tell
hold
them sit
hold
down.
Up, hold up,
be
hold up,
humble.
Hold up,
sit down.
Hold up, hold up, hold up,
be humble.
Hold up, hold up, hold up, hold up,
sit down.
Hold up,
sit down,
holla, holla,
be humble,
holla, holla,
sit down,
holla, holla, holla.
Let's focus on communicating, cause I just need the time and place to come through.
Place to come through.
Send me your location. Let's ride the vibrations. I don't need nothing else.
Alrighty, welcome back to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams, your host, and you're listening on Penguin Radio at Dominican University in California, 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. My last segment for the day is something that I kind of stole from a show called First Take. It is my favorite morning show, and I watch it every single morning. And at the end of their show, they have something called Final Take. It's something in the sports landscape that one of the two co-hosts wants to address and make a final statement about it. Now, I was searching for something good to do for my final take, something that really would resonate more than just a day or two story in the media, like free agency or something like that. I wanted to think of a big picture type of thing to do for my final take. And something I've been thinking about ever since the election, the controversial election of Donald Trump becoming our 45th president of the United States, is the role that Colin Kaepernick's kneeling protests had during that election. Now, hear me out on this, because I know it's a controversial topic, and I'm not saying that Colin Kaepernick helped in any way Donald Trump getting elected, but I just want to paint a picture for everyone. What Colin Kaepernick did was kneel during the national anthem. He did this because he feels like a lot of people in this country that African Americans and minority groups are misrepresented. A lot of people feel this way, not just Colin Kaepernick. And a lot of people have done protests. Obviously, there's the Black Lives Matter movement. There's all of these type of things. And they all serve their course. And, you know, they are controversial. But what Colin Kaepernick did as a public figure, a sports figure, was take it one step further. He decided, look, I don't believe in the America that's going on right now. I don't think it's the values that I signed up for as an American citizen. So he decided, I don't want to stand up. I don't want to salute. I don't want to put my hand to my heart while the national anthem's playing. That's his right. He can do whatever he wants. I am not forming an opinion on that whatsoever, because that's not my job. I'm just outlining facts here. But what that did was create a divide in this country. It sparked outrage. People were either for it or they were against it. And it also scared a lot of people. Politics was now entering into sports. It was now taking over the headlines. No longer could you go on ESPN and just tune out from the election, or just tune out from, you know, the daily dose of Trump and Clinton and all of this. You couldn't, because now you turn on ESPN and they're still talking politics. And that scared a lot of people because sports is everyone's safe zone. It's my safe zone. It's what I turn on when I'm not feeling great. I turn on ESPN or I turn on Fox Sports 1 or I listen to my podcast because it's safe to me. And that's how a lot of people feel. But once that zone didn't become so safe anymore, a lot of people started to resent Colin Kaepernick. A lot of people started to go, oh, he's just selfish. He's just blah, blah, blah. He has no respect for the military. He has no respect. And then you had Donald Trump. And Donald Trump comes in with a completely different message. Whether you agree with it or not, he comes in with the I'm going to make America great again message. I am pro United States, pro everything. I'm going to stand on a stage with flags all around me. And that's great. And that's how he won his election, and you know, he played to that crowd. But what I'm trying to outline here is the fact that Colin Kaepernick, a lot of people were not fans of what he did. It's true. I mean, you can just look it up. I mean, if you go back on Twitter timelines, you'll see a lot of outrage about it. And it's fair in some regards and it's not fair in others. And that's fine. But a lot of people started tuning out the NFL during that. That's a fact. They lost ratings. Whether it's because of Kaepernick or not, many people have speculated it is. It scared a lot of Americans. When someone's scared, they normally go to another person for comfort or another thing, right? You know, you're scared about losing your job, you start comfort eating. You know, you eat comfort food. You're nervous. That's what you do. You start filling that void. Well, isn't it plausible to think, and it may be a little bit of a stretch, but people got scared of the message that Colin Kaepernick was sending. It was a little too much for them. It was a little too much, a little too soon. And they went in the other direction. They started tuning out the NFL, and they started watching more and more politics. And they started listening to Trump a little more and a little more. And maybe, just maybe, they started to agree with a couple of the things he was saying. And I'm not talking about the pro-Trump guys from the start. I'm just talking about, you know, the independents. Maybe they were like, well, I do love America. America does stand for a lot of great things. There's not a whole lot wrong with this country. I don't want to admit it to myself. I don't want to think badly about this great land. And you know, every time I go to a sporting event, I salute the flag and I put my hand on my chest. So maybe they started to identify with him a little more. And maybe that leaned them towards voting for Donald Trump. And just maybe, Colin Kaepernick, in a small type of way, helped Donald Trump win the presidential election in 2016. It may be preposterous to many of you. It's not to me. And that's how I'd like to close off my show today, by telling all of you that the smallest things in life can have big results. Thank you. This is In the Zone with Taylor Williams. You're listening to Penguin Radio at Dominican University in California, 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. Have a great night.